Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And this is our second episode that deals with epigenetics. It deals with the ghost in our genes. Basically getting down to the sort of nature and nurture aspects of who we are. In the last episode, we really went down and discussed some of what's actually happening at the genetic level, what is happening at the epigenetic level, and then how all of that expresses itself in the phenome, which is who and what and we are, how an organism exists, its phenotype. So in this episode, we are going to talk about studies that have involved humans, and exactly how we see epigenetic changes carried on from one generation to the next. And it really gets down to discussions about how much choice do I have. I mean, any discussion of epigenetics and nature and nurture, there's this undercurrent of free will.
Mm-hmm.
To what extent am I shackled to my genes? To what extent is everything about me just laid out in the original code work that came together in the womb? And then how much of it is also out of my hands because of the environment that I am in, and the environment that I'm raised in, the environment that I grow up in, or as we're going to discuss more, the environment that my mother grew up in, or that her mother grew up in.
Right.
Like how much of it is just sort of set in stone to a certain extent before we even have a say-so.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the free will angle about this too, mm-hmm. because when we look at epigenetics, it does sort of bring into question to what degree are we just sort of dealing with the on-off switches of our genes and how they're expressed, and how much of this is a genetically clean slate. Because it used to be that we would assume that, of course, you would get your eye color or your hair color or the tone of your skin from mm-hmm. your parents, from your grandparents, so on and so forth. But you wouldn't necessarily have thought that the things that your mother and father did as 10-year-olds would matter to you, but in fact it does, and we'll discuss that.
Yeah, and then there's a certain amount of magical thinking in all of this as well. There's always, you know, these old ideas that die really hard. The apple never falls far from the tree, kind of a thing. You know, if the father was a criminal, then the son is destined to be a criminal. You know, that kind of thing. If the mother was a genius, and just a multitasker or whatever, you know, accolades you want to throw at her, then surely the offspring will have that as well. And it's not as simple as that.
Right. There's a psychological component to this that we will talk about. But right now we're going to talk more about the physiological component. And in order to do that, we're just going to do a quick overview of epigenetics. Epigenetics is the study of gene expression and how it can vary from one generation to another.
Epigenetics means in addition to the genes. In addition to genetics.
Yeah, epi above the genome, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got the genome with all the DNA, the sequence that does not change. And then you have the material, as you had pointed out before, that's between the genome and the epigenome. And these are the proteins. These are the flip switching areas of gene expression that can be passed down to another generation.
I'm going to use a different metaphor this time that just occurs to me.
Okay.
Okay, think of, say, 30 Rock, the TV show, right?
Lovely, just ended.
Just ended,
very
right.
Very sad.
All right, so imagine this. Liz Lemon comes up with a script for that night's show.
Okay.
All right? And you can think of that script as the genome, all right? It's the genetic code. It says what is going to happen, all right? Let's say that that script then passes over Jack Donaghy's desk, her boss's desk.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, given the current political or business environment, I'm going to make this change and this change and this change and this change and this change. And now this is the script that you're going to actually film. And then the version of the show that you see, the version that is filmed, that is the finished organism.
So he's the
that is the phenotype.
He's the methyl group that attaches to the protein that turns on or off different aspects of the script, right?
Yeah,
so we talked about DNA methylation in the last episode, but we won't talk about it too much here.
Yeah, it's basically the epigenome involves, and I'm going to personify things a little bit here, but it's meddling. It's meddling based on environmental stimuli. Environmental stimuli that may include, that may be nutritional, it may have to do with angry, dangerous predators in the environment, stress in the environment, or various chemicals that are interacting with the organism's body.
Yeah, and this is why one member of a pair of identical twins can develop a bipolar disorder or asthma, even though the other is fine, right? This is epigenetics really helps to explain why this happens.
Because some of the epigenetic changes are taking place in the womb, and they're more or less set for that organism's life. But other switches are coming on, can come on and off throughout that organism's life.
Mm-hmm.
So even though Jack Donaghy made these script changes this week, the environment might change. You get a new president in office, or there are different business concerns, and then he might not make the same changes the following week.
All right. So when we talk about epigenetic changes and we talk about them in humans, one of the best ways to really look at this in detail is to look at the Dutch famine, which happened during World War II. We're talking about between 1944 and 1945. And the reason why researchers wanted to look at the Dutch famine and the families that were involved is because what do we have here? We have an environmental condition such as famine that mm-hmm. could greatly impact not just that generation, but the next generation and how its phenotypes, its attributes, those genes are expressed.
Yeah, because the situation is here that researchers were seeing persistent health problems 6 decades following Dutch hunger winter, as it's called. The researchers found that children exposed to famine during the first 10 weeks following conception had less DNA methylation of the imprinted IGF-2 gene than children of the same sex, siblings of the same sex, that were unexposed to these conditions.
That's right. So, in other words, that DNA methylation was the process that sort of attached to the proteins to turn on or off that gene.
Yeah.
And so, in this instance, they had less of it. In other words, this DNA methylation wasn't able to actually sort of protect them.
Yeah.
And so that this IGF-2 gene was able to express itself a lot more in those children who experienced malnutrition.
Yeah. Now, likewise, children that were exposed to these famine conditions at the end of pregnancy, they showed no difference in methylation compared to siblings that were unexposed. So it's interesting to see at what stage in development those triggers are flipped.
Now, this was in the Netherlands, and again, this was World War II. This was a great experiment for the researchers at Columbia University Public School of Health and the Leiden University, Medical Center in Netherlands to really look at this data because they could see which families had the most food and the least food during that embargo. in the Netherlands. That is one example of what happens when you have a dearth of food, right? But what one researcher did, Dr. Lars Olav Bygren, is he looked at these Overkalix youth in Norrbotten, which is a Swedish province. And he wanted to see how much food was available to these kids. Now, Bygren is a preventive health specialist. And what he did is he drew a random sample of 99 individuals born in this Overkalix parish in Norrbotten in 1905. And he used historical records to trace their parents and grandparents back to birth. So these are meticulous agricultural records, and what they found is that some of these kids had a lot of food available to them during winters. Some kids did not. They had sort of a stasis of impoverished food resources available to them. So what you see is one line of kids who can be sort of gluttonous and eat a large amount at certain times, and another line just that continue on, right? So you would think that the kids who weren't getting a lot of nutrition for the entire period, that they might be the ones that were affected here or adversely affected. But it's actually the kids who overate who we see in successive generations having the problems with their genes switching on. And when I talk about this, these genes switching on and off, I'm talking about diabetes. I'm talking about shorter lifespans. In fact, Bygren found that kids who went from normal eating to gluttonous eating had produced grandsons who died an average of 6 years earlier than the grandsons of those who had endured a poor harvest. And then Bygren and his team controlled for certain socioeconomic variations. And when they did that, the difference in longevity actually jumped to an astonishing 32 years, okay? So, again, what we're seeing here is significant drops in lifespans, and they also found evidence of it occurring on the female line as well. So that means that the daughters and the granddaughters of girls who had gone from normal to gluttonous diets also lived shorter lives.
And, of course, this study is important as we look at our own dietary changes here just over the past, in the past decade. Like here in the United States, as we're looking at generational changes in the approach to food and approach to diet, and you kind of, I mean, in the sort of do it yourself, fix it up, improve your life kind of attitude, you want to think, well, all right, I used to eat this way, I'm eating better, I'm eating smarter, or I don't have the diet that my parents had or the diet that my grandparents had, but you're still to a certain extent kind of shackled to their diet. Which is potentially scary.
Yeah, well, and I think that's why we have seen such a spike in obesity and diabetes in very young children, you know, as young as 5 years old, 6 years old. So some of them are saddled with these genes that are flipped on and off because of parents and previous generations' eating habits or ability to get nutrition. So this guy, Bygren, he did these studies, and then he hooked up with Dr. Marcus Pembrey, and he's a geneticist at the University College in London. And he dared to ask, well, what if the environmental pressures and social changes of the industrial age had become so powerful that evolution had begun to demand that our genes respond faster? So they hooked up, and they found out a bunch of really very interesting things.
Yeah, this one about smoking, particularly interesting. And this one was 2006, published in European Journal of Human Genetics. And I mean, it's one thing to realize that, yes, smoking, which, of course, is a major thing for your body to have to deal with, it's easy to imagine, or especially based on what we've talked about here, to imagine smoking triggering certain epigenetic changes in the body. And then those changes being transgenerational, passing on to the next generation or potentially to generations beyond that. But what was really crazy about this particular study is that they were looked at, over 14,000 fathers in the study, and 166 of them had started smoking before the age of 11, and that's before their bodies were actually preparing to enter puberty, and already these changes were taking place.
Yeah, because it turns out that if they are affecting their body in an adverse way, i.e., smoking at this age, and they began to form sperm, they begin to make it, that is when that sperm, that genetic material, is going to be informed by that outside environmental condition of smoking.
Yes.
And that, it's crazy to think about a 10-year-old who is smoking, I mean, I'm assuming pretty regularly here because you know, would have to be in order to have such a marked imprint.
Right, yeah.
On the genetic material. But that's crazy to think that a 10-year-old could be affecting his future offspring at that moment.
Yeah, and it also, it really throws this other idea on its head, this sort of idea that, like, when you're a kid, that, you know, a lot of stuff that happens when you're young is going to affect who you are as an adult, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of sort of write in a certain amount of room for mistakes. Like, oh, I can start smoking when I'm young and quit later, and if I can quit, then great, then I'm done with that. Or, you know, you can do maybe kind of stupid things when you're 10 years old, and it's not going to really have as much impact on your later life. But already, it's having an effect on your children when you're 10, and that's it's really eye-opening to think about.
Yeah, I mean, because those kids who took up smoking that early, they had kids who had a much higher risk for obesity, and they had other health problems well into adulthood and shorter lifespans. So what's amazing about the study is that they had 14,000 individuals, mm-hmm. and that's a very large sample. And year after year, they were able to look at the offspring and the parents here and look at them in terms of, like, their bone density, how much they weighed, what their habits were, and they were able to track them over a number of years. And so they got an amazing amount of data that can show them very clearly that, you know, some of the genes were flipped on or off in these instances.
Yeah, I also ran across a study talking about cocaine use. And in this way, this experiment, they were using mice. So these were cocaine-using mice. And they found that in these mice, the mice would develop memory problems that would pass on three generations due to these epigenetic changes. So there's another example of something where, you know, one might think, oh, well, the sins of one's youth, you know, there'll be ramifications for that. But you tend not to think of three generations worth of ramifications for, you know, your drug habit.
Yeah, you know, I can't figure out whether or not this is comforting or just really problematic.
Well,
to understand it at this level,
you know, I think it's a little column A, column B. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's. And, you know, we'll get into this a little more before we close out the podcast. But even as we continue to map out so many of these things that make us who we are, all these different environmental changes and
mm-hmm.
and the things written in our genes that contribute to us, there. I mean, ultimately, you're going to have to roll with what you get. So
yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, you can worry about it a lot. You can worry about, okay, well, what were my child's genetics? What were they? And then how am I nurturing this child? And it becoming this battle of nurture and nature. And then you can kind of overanalyze everything. But at the end of the day, you're going to have to roll with it.
Yeah, I know. And I realized this because my daughter has been asking about death a lot lately. And
mm-hmm.
so, just, you know, the question du jour this morning was, you know, what are the various ways that, you know, people die, or how do people die? And so I was trying to tell her with her 4-year-old mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to explain to her disease, which was very hard for her to get her mind around. She wanted to know if insects gave her diseases. And of course I said
yes.
I said no. I thought, well, technically in some cases, but I said no, because of course I don't want her to be frightened of every ladybug and mosquito that she says she sees flying around. So anyway, need to know basis at 4 years old. But I began to think about this. I began to think, well, you know, as she gets older, she can have a more nuanced understanding of epigenetics. And certainly, you know, when she reaches age 20, there should be a lot that can be uncovered
mm-hmm.
about not just my epigenetics, but hers and perhaps, you know, various other offspring, and trying to figure out sort of what the sins of the mother and father were.
Yeah. And it can, I mean, it can certainly be perplexing to think about, too. I mean, for instance, my wife and I are in the process of adopting a child. And so in that situation, the nurturing, of course, is going to be almost entirely on us. There's
mm-hmm.
There's a certain amount of time there that we're not in the picture, obviously. But then, of course, the genetics, the nature aspect of it is almost entirely out of our hands.
Mm-hmm.
So it can lead to a certain amount of worry and perplexion over the nature versus nurture, over the epigenetic changes that we can contribute to, and those that have already left the train station. But again, at the end of the day, you got to roll with it. So
that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. You can't over worry about it. But, of course, you know, you got to roll with what you get genetically, but you also have to roll with what you get in terms of emotional baggage when it comes to our parents, our ancestors. And this is where we, of course, discuss the ancestor syndrome. But before we talk about this, we should probably take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. A-S-T-E-P-R-O allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch stratacoaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we're back, and we're going to talk now about a little something called ancestor syndrome and about some of the more almost philosophical aspects of genetic memory. Or even racial memory, if you want. And in this, we can't help but think about Carl Jung, who he had, of course, this theory of the collective unconscious, and this idea that there's this level of unconscious beyond a personal unconscious, beyond our own subconscious, that is shared by a society that's written in our ancestry, and it's the reservoir of experiences and beliefs. What have you, that we're ruled over by all these various universal archetypes, mm-hmm. that while the particulars of them may change, the idea of the archetype is just embedded in our history. And so Jung talked a good bit about racial unconscious, racial memory, and there's a certain amount of this to be interpreted when we start looking at epigenetics.
It's true because, we don't have scientific evidence to say that our ancestors' actual emotional experiences were passed down to us.
Right.
We can say that the environmental conditions could flip a switch.
Because, that's a scary thought right there, because everyone has their emotional things in any lineage that are going to be problematic.
Right.
Be it, you know, your uncle, you know, your great-great-grandfather was a king who had his head cut off, or your great-great-grandfather was, you know, a poor miner in West Virginia just struggling to make ends meet, you know?
Yeah, and it's those kind of, like, forebearers' autobiographies that help put together this idea that we do have these experiences passed down to us via stories, and that makes an impact on our psyches. Anne Anselin Schutzenberger, she is a professor emeritus at the University of Nice in France. She's actually 90 years old now. But she coined the term psychogenealogy. And this is this idea that there are these subtle ways in which we impact generations of offspring, and the idea that all family groups share an inherent tendency to transmit those elements necessary for the continued survival of the group.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the group, the tribe, the family has ideas, traditions, certain things that it does over and over again to ensure the survival of this identity. And through stories, wills even, a will is a story, right?
Yeah.
Again, traditions, that's a really big part of it. So Schutzenberg describes the theory of invisible loyalty as being something that is owed to previous generations, and that this is a catalyst for unwittingly reenacting the life events of our ancestors.
Huh.
So this is the idea that you have this invisible loyalty to your great-grandmother, Josephine, who was the first circus acrobat. I don't know. And you begin to think, you begin to take on these characteristics for yourself. So I think it's interesting because, you know, a child is born, it doesn't necessarily have any sort of identity.
Right.
It's got its genetic identity. It's got its phenotypes that are expressed, turned on and off. But then we begin to sort of do these, or layer these memories on top of this child to make the identity. And that's all good and fine if the child is good with this identity. But if it is not, then, of course, this is where we see conflict.
Yeah. And, I mean, I can't help but think, too, about various materials I've read about the so-called, quote-unquote, scar of adoption that anyone, and this is an area where people argue both sides,
mm-hmm.
but there's this argument that any adopted child who comes to know about their adoption, that there is a certain emotional scar there that's just unavoidable, because I mean it becomes that person's personal history, and they mm-hmm. have to fit themselves into this grander story of their lineage. So,
well, what's interesting about this is there's a psychotherapist, Malachi Coleman, and she says that a child is doted on with an emotional and psychological DNA chain from its parents and family, which enables the child to function successfully in that particular family context. So mm-hmm. if you have a child who is adopted, then already the child is forming this story that they didn't fit into the family
right.
context. Or can. A child can, I should say. That doesn't always happen. So that's the struggle there, I think, for trying to figure out where a child fits in. Now, you know, a child who is not adopted, I think, still feels this way.
Yeah, yeah. That's one thing to always keep in mind is that any child is going to struggle with who they are and what they are, and the possibility that their mom is actually a princess and not the mother that they have in their life. You see that kind of situation because my my younger sister,
mm-hmm.
who's not adopted, but she would form these stories in her head about how she was actually the secret Biltmore child. I think this was after my family, like, we went and saw the Biltmore mansion
yeah.
in Nashville. And so she had this story that she began to form that she was secretly one of the Biltmore children.
Wow.
And that was her real family. So you see that kind of personal myth-making, in various levels, be it an adopted situation or birth parent situation. So
now my brother told me when I was 6 years old that I was adopted, and I had blonde hair at that mm-hmm. time, and my family, dark hair, blue eyes, and then he went through this whole sham thing and pretended he couldn't find my birth certificate and produced his.
Uh-huh.
I mean, wow.
Wow, that was elaborate.
It was, yeah, that's the kind of kid he is. But yeah, I mean, I think at some point every child and adult feels like a black sheep with their family, and so you do get this emotional baggage, and you do get these stories that are passed down that are like this sort of genetic memory, and I put that in air quotes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it is sort of like this layering of information over you, and this leads us to magical thinking, of course.
Oh, yeah. We get into, of course, the idea of law of contagion. We've discussed this to a certain extent in the past, too, about the idea. It gets into the whole area of, like, the powder of sympathy and the idea that that you could treat a wound by treating the weapon that caused the wound, or mm-hmm. that by coming into contact with somebody, you can contract their sort of spiritual or mental funk.
Yeah, and so if you have something that is your ancestors, if you have artwork or some sort of piece of thing that's theirs, it feels like it has this magical quality to it,
yeah.
because it brings with it all of this psychic sort of baggage that your family is carrying around with them all the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about stuff and things. We attach so much importance to them, and then and that has a definite impact on how we think about them. I mean, case in point, my father's wristwatch that he was wearing when he died, and I have been wearing it for the past couple of years. And then the other day, it stopped ticking, like the battery went mm-hmm. Dead in it, which is something I knew would happen eventually. I knew it didn't have like an atomic battery in there or anything. But when it stopped working, it's like I became real emotional, like mm-hmm. in spite of myself, mm-hmm. knowing that this was going to happen. But there was this aspect that this was an artifact that was somehow embodied with a sense of him, and that it had kept ticking, and that therefore a part of him was still ticking in it, even though half of me just dismisses that as hooey, even as I say it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part of me that still really buys into that.
Well, and I think that's what that's the point here is, like, that we should underscore is that our family autobiography is very powerful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talk about things at the genetic level, and we talk about environmental aspects of it. And certainly we can see the phenotype expressed under pressure, but there is the psychological pressure too. And as you had noted at the top of the podcast, you know, if we tell our stories the same, if we tell ourselves the same stories all the time, like my family is this and we do this, you know, we're geniuses, then you begin to perform that part.
Yeah.
Or we're bank robbers. I'm going to go rob a bank.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I don't know if anybody actually thinks that, but.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And for a limited time, get more fun for less with the Michigan Bundle for just $49.99. Exclusive to Michigan residents only. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
But, to a certain extent, I think there comes a part in anyone's life where you have to stop believing the story about yourself that people are telling you and start writing your own story, or at mm-hmm. least editing that story, applying, in a way, epigenetic changes to the story you're given.
Become the Jack Donaghy of your own script.
Exactly. Yes, become the Jack Donaghy of your own script and say, you know what? I feel like there was a part in my life where I had to say, you know what? I'm a really good writer, and that's going to be my thing, and that's my story. And it becomes your story, within a limited extent. I couldn't say, now I'm going to be the president of the United States. That maybe not. You got to level your dreams with your abilities. But there does come a point where you have to, I think, rewrite that story. Otherwise, you're just going to be shackled to this old story. And that's where actually some of Schulzenberger's work comes into play, where she was examining things like, quote unquote, family curses. I'm probably doing too many air quotes in this podcast. I apologize. But, looking into ideas of family curses and things of this nature, and looking at it really having to do with buying into a story and into a lineage, and letting that influence who you think you are.
That's interesting. That's like the Kennedy curse, right?
Yeah.
If you look at that, yes, a bunch of things happened in their family, but they have a very large family living in a very different way.
Yeah. Well, and of course, slavery in America is a big thing, too, because you have something, among racial divides, you have individuals who go back in time and you find slavery, or you find slavers, and it continues and will continue to be a problematic aspect of kind of our psychohistory.
This is true.
All right. Well, there you go. Two episodes that we've done now about epigenetics. And I think, this supplies a good starting point for everyone to really think about genetic changes, epigenetic changes, nature versus nurture in sort of a larger theme.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to learn a little bit more, you want to rehash some of the details, do check out the article, How Epigenetics Works, on HowStuffWorks.com. I did write that. I wrote it a couple of years ago, so it may need an update, but still all the core information in that is still good.
It's a very fine article, and it does point out some of the practical applications here too, that I just wanted to mention, that drug therapies are beginning to be developed and have been developed to help flip those switches when it comes to disease, like the drug azacitidine, and that helps suppress leukemia. So keep that in mind too. It's not all just we need to look at the ghost in the machine. There are definite things that are coming out of this to help us along as we get a better understanding of epigenetics.
Yeah. And I'll close out here with a quote from Peter Brook's play, his adaptation of the Hindu epic, the Mahabharata, where one character is speaking about the character Karna, who himself was an orphan who grew up to be a mighty warrior. And the quote is, birth is obscure, and men are like rivers whose origins are often unknown. So there you go. Let's call the robot over here and do just one quick listener mail before we leave. All right, this one comes to us from Dominique. Dominique writes and says, hi, Julian Robert. Just listened to your Cool Science of 2012 podcast. Really great. I'm surprised you didn't reference the phoenix when speaking about the immortal jellyfish. And immortal in quotes there, because as we discussed, it's not really immortal, but for headline purposes, it's immortal.
Right.
It was the first thing that came to my mind, that this is the aquatic equivalent of the legendary bird that would go up in flames at the end of its life to leave an egg in its place, which would from which it would then be reborn. Which is a very good point. I don't know why I didn't think about the phoenix, because it's really more of an example of the mythical phoenix, as more so than it is an example of immortality.
Mm-hmm.
Dominique continues, quantum teleportation also had me smiling as I first started to equate the entangled pair of subparticles to those mythical twins where one supposedly feels the pain of the other even across large distances. Of course, in this case, the twins would be killed off every time a cut would be made on their arm to transmit a bit of the info. I'm now imagining a sci-fi story where shiploads of twins would be brought to the distant planet by a supply ship, then sacrificed by the thousands every time a message had to be sent.
Wow, yeah, that's sort of like Hunger Games scenario.
Yeah, and
one twin would have to.
And Dominique writes to us from France, by the way. So there you go. But yes, that the twin example was a great one that I wish I would have thought about. A few years back in New York, there was this guy who was offering, it's kind of like an art installation kind of piece, the idea of quantum marriage, where you would supposedly become quantum entangled to your partner. So it gets into a little bit of that.
Well, thanks, Dominic, for writing in.
So if you would like to share anything with us, particularly if you'd like to share your thoughts on genetic and epigenetics, about the stories that we bring into our lives, that the stories that we end up creating and tweaking to really become who we are, then let us know about it. We would love to hear your insight. And your thoughts. You can find us on Facebook and Tumblr. We are Stuff to Blow Your Mind on both of those. And you can also find us on Twitter, where our handle is Blow the Mind.
And you can always write us a letter at blowthemind@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.